Hi, I'm Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton, and you're listening to Single High, a Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com, the official home of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club.
Back to throw, Meyer. Looks, rolls to the right. Pump fake, throws the ball. It is caught, Reggie Brooks! Reggie Brooks got it!
Downfield, and Hamilton again, coming over from that safety position and making the interception.
DB's on the field, the Sherron Jones throws.
To go almost 20 yards.
Ishmael down around the 5-yard line. The kick will come down and Ragib will take it. Takes it at the 12, 15, 20, 25. He's at the 30. Afterburners are on. He's gone.
That is the All-American Kyle Hamilton. His sixth career interception.
40, 45, 50. Down the sideline. At the 35. Or right to the goal line. At the 10. The 5. A touchdown.
Here are your hosts, Frank Vitovich and Greg Flamon.
Welcome back to another edition of Single Eye, Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com. Coming to you a couple days after Notre Dame's disappointing ending to the 2022 regular season. The Irish falling in Los Angeles over Thanksgiving weekend to the Trojans. Having an inability to slow down Caleb Williams and the USC offense. I am one of your hosts, Frank Vitovich, joined as always by my partner in crime, president of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club and video analyst at Irish Sports Daily, Mr. Greg Flamong. Greg, you live in the shadows of the beast right now. How have you been doing the last couple of days?
It's fine. I don't need to really interact with USC fans, but so there's not a ton of, like, in my life there's not a ton of
no, that's good,
like, sports fans. Okay. I mean, beyond Michael, but, like, neither of us are really, like, he'll rib me every now and then and I'll rib him, but, like, it's not bad. It's like he knows, I think we both know, like, when the other one is, especially when the teams play each other, like, when the other one loses, it's like we're not jerks about it.
That's good.
You're right. So I'm not a jerk to him. And so in turn, like, he's not a jerk to me. So that kind of works out. And he's really the only one.
Gotcha.
It's fine. It is hard. Like, I haven't been to a game at the Coliseum since 2012.
Okay.
Because 14, I knew they were going to get crushed, so I didn't go.
Yeah.
16, same.
Gross. Yeah.
And then 18 was, I just couldn't go. But, like, so it was, it's like, man, it's really annoying to be there.
Oh yeah.
When, like, USC's good. It's like the Coliseum has a different kind of energy. So
park the bandwagons when USC's good at the Coliseum?
Well, I was saying,
do they have,
you know,
like, a whole separate lot for them, or?
I mean, the thing is that I think people are, look, I mean, I kind of get it, right? Like, there's tons of USC fans, but, like for me, like, here's a good example. Like, it's a good example of what I just said, right? Like, I didn't go to the 2014 game.
Mm-hmm.
And why not? Because I knew Notre Dame was going to get crushed. So
right.
I don't want to go, like, take time out of my day and, like, spend money and do all this stuff to go see them lose, right? So like, USC fans are similar, right? They stink. So why do we want to go watch that?
Mm.
But it's just like last week I was in the press box and all the windows are closed because of the snow and the coldness, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not listening to, like, it's like I'm not listening to Notre Dame fans cheer. Whereas, mm-hmm. like, for this game, all the windows are open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm sitting essentially in the stands, and it's like, geez, man. It's like, that's annoying. Like, just, yeah. You know, you don't want to hear it. It's understandable, obviously. You cheer for your team.
Yeah.
But it's annoying. So that's the hard part.
Well, I'll tell you what, and for those of you who don't know, Michael is the co-host of one of Greg's other podcasts, the untitled USC Notre Dame podcast. I got to say, it's nice that you guys have that type of understanding, because I definitely have some friends who, as much as they've known me for years, still like to, you know, rattle the cage, like in the immediate aftermath of losses sometimes. And I'm like, can you just give me like an hour? No, I need more than that. Just give me till the next morning to just stew in my own, my own disappointment, and then give me your shit the next morning. But it's like when you get sent that from like a friend whose team just beat yours in like the waning seconds of a game, or like, you know, even before the game ends, if the outcome is no longer in doubt, it is just like, no, don't do that. There's definitely friends who I don't even know if I would call them friends anymore who've done those sort of things where it's like,
we're good about that.
Yeah, because it's like, well, and you know, it's not like they were not friends because of that specifically, but it's like, you know what? If you were doing that and you know how much this upsets me, are you a good friend? You're probably not. So that's great that you don't have to endure that, because I remember, you know, just like growing up in Penn State territory, and like the few times Penn State would beat Notre Dame was just miserable. During those times, or even in like 2007, living in Philly, surrounded by a lot of Penn State fans, it was not, they were not quiet about it. But let's talk about this game, because this game was, it wasn't great. You know, we ended the last pod saying, like, you know what, if Notre Dame could just blow everybody out, it would be great. It would make these podcasts fun, and make life a little more enjoyable. But Notre Dame was like, can't quite do that, you know, one more time this year. And I don't necessarily think, like, I don't know. Let me start here, actually. Did the outcome, you know, shock you or surprise you, like, in any way?
No.
Right. So, same. Because we even said, like, on the last pod, I was like, I feel like that the chances of Notre Dame losing were greater than the chances of Notre Dame winning that game, even though I thought Notre Dame had a chance. And the reason for that was kind of exactly what we saw on, defensively, at least. We'll talk about the offense, you know, in a little bit, because I was shocked at how well Drew Pine played, despite some debilitating errors. But defensively, I don't think anybody expected Caleb Williams to, you know, yeah, escape. I don't even want to call it escaping pressure all those times, because half of the times he was aided, by a lack of holding calls that were just really, really blatant. But I don't think I foresaw him being such a weapon with his legs in this game. I figured he'd throw it on Notre Dame more, especially when I saw Cam Hart was going to miss the game. When they announced that on Saturday afternoon or whenever the PR team sent out the tweet, I was like, "Oh, that's not what you want. You don't want to be going into the Coliseum against a great offense with one of your top corners down. You're also missing Tariq Bracey." So I thought he would be throwing the ball more. I'm actually like, you look at the stats and like USC's passing game was not, you know. They were fine. It wasn't, you know, anything crazy, but, Notre Dame's inability to stop USC was, I think, you know, what was why I thought, you know, Notre Dame had a greater chance to lose. I was surprised, however, with, you know, what USC was able to do to Notre Dame, you know, that Notre Dame wasn't able to stop. I figured, you know, USC could hit a bunch of chunk plays passing the ball downfield, and it was the opposite. I mean, they had fewer chunk plays in the passing game than Notre Dame, and they just ran it, and that was the surprising part to me. What about you? What about you?
Yeah, so I didn't. When Hart was out, it was obviously like that's not good, right?
Right.
And then when the game started, and Notre Dame, you know, lined up in four down and then they shifted to three down like right away,
mm-hmm.
I thought, well, that's interesting, right? Like they're, you know, you're really going to have to, they're really going to have to do well up front too, because the number advantage is basically it's not a number advantage, but like it's even numbers in there. Yeah. So it's like, you're really going to have to do well. And the thing is USC's been a good running team. It's not like they haven't been, you know, we assume that Notre Dame's front seven, but their front is going to be able to, you know, hold up. And so when we saw in three down and they had, you know, then they were going 3-3-5 a lot. And I thought, man, like that's weird. Like it was odd. But then when we saw that after the first series, it was like, hey, why isn't Tariq Bracey playing? Yeah. What's going on? And that was unknown to everybody. Right. So I think Cam Hart, we knew he was hurt. And I think we can now say that when Marcus Freeman says you're questionable, you're not going to play.
Yeah,
that's it, right? Like, I mean, he's in a sling, you know. Like, we saw him go out for the pregame prayer thing, and it's like, oh, Cam Hart's in a sling, so he's not gonna play.
Yeah,
and so, but then, you know, Bracey is not playing, and it's like, well, what's going on there? Like, no one knew about that, and so then it made sense because now you have Jaden Mickey, who's gonna have to play the whole game, and he's been a spot player at best. I don't think he's ever played more than 30 snaps in a game.
No, that was his max.
He's playing. Now he's got to go the whole way against USC, and that's obviously so. Notre Dame had to protect him a little bit, so they had to play it a little bit safer there and a little bit softer up front, which put more pressure on the front guys and the D line and the linebackers to have like really good games.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, they didn't. No. They did not have a good game. So, but because of that, I thought, it's not surprising that USC would run the ball on Notre Dame because of that situation. In the first half, I thought they actually did pretty well against the run. You know, and then the second half and the first drive that USC had after the fumble, it was like, okay, they're in real big trouble. And I assume what happened was USC kind of had a good idea for what Notre Dame was running, and then they were able to adjust. They probably made some adjustments there, and they were able to take advantage. I think for me, the thing that really hurt Notre Dame is it was kind of a numbers game in terms of possessions, right? So I in the game, my predictions post for ISD, I noted that in the last four games, USC has come out of the first quarter tied or losing, right? It was 10-10, 7-6. Down 3-2 and down 14-0 UCLA, right? And in the last, you know, during this little winning streak, Notre Dame has been in the lead at the end of the first quarter in every single one of those games. And that is huge for them, right? Because they want to control the game and they want to control the pace of the game. And in this one, it was, you know, USC start, score, Notre Dame three and out, USC score. You went down 10-0 to USC.
Yeah.
Okay. That's in itself not good, because now you're chasing them, right? And they get to dictate how the game goes. USC had four real possessions in the first half.
Yeah.
And they scored on three of them, two touchdowns and a field goal, and they had to punt once. And Notre Dame had three real possessions. So that was the other part, is after Notre Dame scored their touchdown, because they had moved the ball. Notre Dame, they had the three and out, and it was a missed block by Evans. And they're, you know, it's like, geez, okay, now we have to punt, right? And then the second drive, they're moving the ball fine. They're doing fine. And then they're getting third and two or third and three or whatever it was. And it's one of those things where you could probably call a couple plays that you think will work. And Reese calls a play. And USC, for the second time, doesn't cover the back. And Pine doesn't see it. And so he tries to scramble. And he doesn't. And he ends up short. He ends up a yard short. And that's another situation where it's like, okay, there's probably a couple plays we can run here,
mm-hmm.
but we're going to sneak it because we've been doing well. The other part too on the sneak, and Jamie made a good point about this, is I don't think that Mitchell Evans knew exactly how far he needed to go because he didn't push for the yard. He lunged. He got the snap and just jumped.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he thought it was inches. And instead, it was like a full yard.
Yep.
So he ended up inches short. Like he didn't normally on the fourth and ones, like they've just gotten a real good push, but he just jumped for it. Right. So that's no good. So Notre Dame's moving the ball on that drive and they end up with nothing. Then they get the ball back. That's when they stop USC and they go right down the field and score. And there's like 6 minutes left in the half and USC scores on this drive. They take 5.5 minutes to go down and score. And Notre Dame doesn't get that fourth possession
yep.
to try to answer and then get the ball back to start the second half. So right there, you're down a possession. Okay, so just by math, it's like you put yourself at a disadvantage there, right? It's 17-7 at that point. And if you had another, 3 minutes to try and get it to 17-14 or 17-10,
yeah.
and then you get the ball to start second half, like you're even on possessions, right? You're caught up. So what at halftime, we were talking in the box, like this is a must score because of that very reason. It's like Notre Dame has to do what USC did. It has to be score, stop, score. And then you're caught up and or you have the lead, right? You have to match them. And Notre Dame's driving the ball. They're going right down the field. And Pine puts it on the ground with no one around. It's a first and 10 play. And he puts it on the ground with no one around. USC recovers. And that's it. That's the game. And I
said,
all said it at the time. That's going to be the ball game right there because you can't, because then they went down three scores and you can't catch up enough, right? No. You can't do enough. And so then Notre Dame on the next two possessions went down and scored touchdowns, down and scored touchdowns. They made it 24-14 and then USC scored. It's 31-14. And then Notre Dame went right down and scored again, 31-21. And then Notre Dame got a stop. And then Pine made, at that point, another poor decision to throw the ball on the run, throw it late over the middle. And I kind of feel bad because he tried to force it. And the other part, too, and this doesn't show up on the replay copy, but he had Jaden Thomas on the right. And he went to break as Pine started to scramble. He went to break down the sideline. And the DB was out of position. He was going to be wide open, and he slipped, and he fell. And so then Pine took his eyes off him, and then he tried to fit into Lindsey, and obviously it didn't work out, right? So it was unlucky there for Jaden Thomas to slip, and then it was just a bad decision, right? You got to throw it in the stands. And that's, again, the whole point, though, is that they put themselves in a position where you're chasing possessions. And it was that one possession right after halftime that ended it, because you didn't get to score, and then USC went down and scored, and then that was it. I mean, that was it. You're down 24-7. It's like there's no way you're making scores against this team.
No. And that end of first half drive by USC was so frustrating because it's like. I say it all the time. Apparently, it's part of my brand since Brendan mentioned it on Twitter during the game at a later point where it's like Notre Dame finally had scored. You make it 10-7, and it's like it's 6 minutes to go. Like all they had to do was like just not – even if they gave up just a field goal there, it wouldn't have been as bad because then you're still looking at a one-score game. But it's like not only did the defense – not get the stop that you ideally want. They gave up the touchdown and they let USC use almost the entire clock. It was almost the worst thing that the defense could have done. Like giving up a two-play drive for with a 70-yard touchdown or whatever the drive was, wouldn't have been as bad as letting USC use the entire clock, go up 10, or what did not, yeah, 10, into halftime. That was just, it was the worst thing they could have done.
And right. Like, it's almost better, like you said, it's almost better to let them score with 3 minutes left, because then you can try to score.
Exactly. Instead, you get Notre Dame with 30 seconds or whatever it was left on the clock. And first of all, God, Fowler and Herb Street were just absolutely brutal on Saturday night. Listening to them, they were terrible to listen to if you were a Notre Dame fan. From the jump, they were, you know, USC, USC, USC. But I think it was Herb Street was like, wow, I'm surprised Notre Dame's trying to do something here. It's like, you what you are?
Notre Dame was smart. They had to chase that extra possession.
Yeah.
They had to. It was so important. It was yeah. very smart.
And Herb Street sitting here like, they did that. I don't know why they're trying to do this. It's like, why do you think they're trying to do this? Like, the lack of preparation and just awareness of announcers across college football and even pro.
It's game strategy.
Yeah.
You know, like, figure it out, man. Like, you need possessions.
Yeah.
Because you have an advantage against their defense. Like, that's the whole point. And it played out. Like, everyone's saying, like, oh, garbage time defense. No, Notre Dame was moving the ball on them after the first three and out. Notre Dame moved the ball on them consistently the whole night.
Yep.
Like, it wasn't a garbage time thing. That's just the way it was.
But man, Herb Street, they both were absolutely brutal. Nothing will beat, you know, Herbie sitting there saying, you know what? Brandon Joseph isn't used to returning punts, but he should have done better there. And just not realizing anything that was going on. Like, I don't know what they – anyway, that was – those two, I really hope I don't have to listen to them call another Notre Dame game this year, which probably won't, given the bowl game that Notre Dame's going to end up in now. But, whew, they were rough. And, you know, we talked a little bit already about the offense did move the ball. And it do you feel bad in a way for Drew Pine? Because he, in a lot of regards, he played the game of his life, you know, against USC. And it's going to be remembered more for those two just crushing turnovers and mistakes. Because, I mean, otherwise his numbers were insane. I just had him loaded up and I closed it because I didn't want 23 of 26, 318, three touchdowns, and the one interception. Those are damn good numbers. Better passing numbers than Caleb Williams had. I mean, granted, Caleb Williams ran for three touchdowns, but I don't. If a week ago somebody had come up to you and said, hey, Saturday night, Drew Pine is going to be 23 of 26. He's going to throw for over 300 yards, and he's going to have three touchdowns. Like, how many Notre Dame fans, how many just in general, you know, fans would have said, like, oh, that's probably a game Notre Dame's going to lose? I don't think too many.
Right. Like, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's obviously, I mean, there's like a lot of things, right? Like, if you tell me that, but then if you tell me Notre Dame's going to run for 90, I know, yeah. Well, that's no good either, right?
No.
Like, obviously, I mean, he played a good game. I thought he was well protected. He made the right decisions. He was accurate. I mean, look at it. He's played like this before. It's just something you can't really count on, you know? And he did this against North Carolina.
Yeah.
He did it against BYU, right?
It's on,
like,
the road.
He's played this way before. And not just that, too, but – like, this wasn't like dinky dunky either, right? Like, he was pushing the ball down the field. I mean, that's the impressive part, is that he was pushing the ball.
12.2 average.
Right.
That's pretty good.
Right. Yards per attempt. I mean, that's great stuff, right? It's great playing, you know, and so he gave them a chance. But defensively, they didn't have an answer for, you know, someone the caliber of Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
They needed someone like JOK or Kyle or, Jalen or someone, right? Someone like JOK's tracking him down, or Kyle Hamilton, someone like that, where it's like they have a bunch of guys who are all like just good college football players.
Yep.
And Caleb Williams is the number one pick in the draft. You know what I mean? And so when it came down to him, it was just like, yeah, he's going to do something that Notre Dame does not have an answer for. And you needed him to play, you know, you needed him to play a, basically a poor football game, and he just didn't.
No,
he you know, did he not. Just didn't. He didn't. And look at it. And you know, we're talking about the final drive of the half, you know, when he does the scramble around thing. And it's just, it's one of those moments where, you know, you look at it and you just say, like, when the game's over, you say to yourself, you know, Caleb Williams is too much. USC won the key moments in the game, and that's why they won.
Yep.
Right? They got their advantage, and they won the game. But then, you know, it's second and 10 or whatever it is, and Caleb Williams is running around, and Isaiah Foskey's turning the corner, and the tight end grabs his shoulder pad. And it's like, it's not like super egregious, terrible, but at the same time, it's like he prevents him from making the play. Yep. And then Caleb Williams is allowed to get out of there. And it's like, look, you know, you don't call it, right? And so then it's a 30-yard gain, and it sets them up to score the touchdown. And it's just like, it's super frustrating when later in the game, there's a holding call that they call on Ramon Henderson, which, you know, the guy's crossing the end zone and he grabs him, right? But when he grabs him, Caleb Williams is, his back is to the end zone. He's running away from the end zone. He cannot, he's not even facing the play.
Yeah.
And he's doing his thing where he's not even looking. Like, he is not even looking. And it's like you're calling a grab when Caleb Williams isn't looking downfield and is running in the opposite direction. It's like, oh, he's holding him. It's like he can't even see him. What are you talking about? Like, so that's when it's like, oh, but it's a penalty. You know, it's like, all right, we're going to call it because it's a penalty by the book. It's like, but the other one, you let it go.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a selective officiating that's super frustrating, just like in the moment, right? Mm. And it's the other one I put on Twitter where it's like, they're grabbing him. They're just grabbing. That's all they're doing. He is behind him. His arms are out and he's grabbing him by the waist. And you don't call it. And so it's a 30-yard difference in field position.
Yeah.
And so those are the things that are frustrating. It's like, so when you go back, it's like, look, I'll just say, like, USC won because they won the key moments, right? They did. Yeah. And I'm not going to say it's because of refs or whatever. It wasn't.
No.
USC was better. Caleb Williams was better. He was more efficient. You know, USC got four stops and Notre Dame got two stops. And that's the difference, right? Yeah. But a third stop before the half could have been the difference, right? Like, it just could have.
Yeah.
And so it's frustrating. That part of it is frustrating. It is. You're already up against it. You're already up against this great player who's playing out of his mind. And then he's allowed to do this, and it costs you 7 points. So.
Yeah. I mean, and a couple things on that too, just in general, piggybacking on some of the stuff that you were saying there. I mean, yeah, the officials, like, the officiating is just bad in football, not college football, not pro. It's just bad in football at all levels. There's been games where it was probably even worse. Where the officiating was just really, really bad. The thing that was frustrating about Saturday night is just that they seemingly just said, like, USC, you can hold Notre Dame's defensive line, or the linebackers. You could hold the blitzers. You could do whatever you want, essentially. And it's like, to your point, is like Notre Dame was going to have to win even numbers in a lot of these cases because they had to protect the back end of the defense. And it's like, okay, well, how the hell are you supposed to win even numbers when you also are, you know, being held? So that part was just frustrating. And it was happening on all these plays where everyone's gushing over Caleb. Oh, my God, Caleb. He's running 80 yards and completing. It's like, yeah, because, like, they're not getting him down because half of them are being held. So that was just annoying, that it was not that they just were not calling it. And it was like, you knew early on, it's like, well, this is happening a lot. They're just, it's just not going to be a penalty tonight. All right. How do we get around this? But so there's that. But I think, you know, you mentioned too that Notre Dame's got a lot of players who are just good college football players and we're missing that game record. And I couldn't agree more, because if there was any game this year that we watched Notre Dame play where you're like, yeah, this team just needs an infusion of talent at multiple levels of the defense, it was this game. Because the other losses, Stanford, you're like, whatever, that was a stupid game. There was no reason, you know, for that one to be ever to be a loss. And it's like, I don't think you couldn't make any conclusions about the roster from, because it's like, well, Notre Dame's roster is a lot better than Stanford's, right? Same with Marshall. It's like, stupid game, stupid loss. Even Ohio State, it was like, yeah, Notre Dame's defense hung with Ohio State pretty damn well, much better than USC. But this game, it was like, oh yeah, Notre Dame needs some of these younger players that, you know, came in last year and that are coming in this year to hit, because they just don't have, to your point, they don't have somebody who, you know, we thought it was going to be Foskey, and he's had a pretty good season, but like, you know, he didn't take the next step this year. Like, he took a big leap between his sophomore year and junior year. And if he would have taken like half of the same leap this year, he maybe was that game wrecker, but he kind of was just like almost the same that he was last year. Maybe even a little bit, you know, taking a little bit of a step back. But it's just like the rest of the defensive line, like there's no one else who, you know, took a leap and became like just a real difference maker. You look across the linebacking core, and we had hoped it was going to be Maris Liefau, but his first season as a starter was very, I mean, it was up and down. We'll say it was not kind of what, you know, we had expected based on kind of the buzz that he had last year and then coming into this year, which, I mean, man, how many times did he sneak up to the line and just run into a wall? A lot on Saturday night. It was just like repeated.
Here's the thing with Marist.
Yeah. Okay.
He played the most snaps on the defense this year.
Mm-hmm.
601 snaps. 49 tackles. Third on the team.
Yeah.
Third on the team or not, 49 tackles is for that amount of snaps from a linebacker.
It's not great.
It's not good. It's not good production.
No.
The other part is Jack Kaiser.
Yeah.
52 tackles for Jack Kaiser. 305 snaps. He took almost 300 less snaps than Marist and had more tackles than him.
That's not good.
That is not good. It's 3.5 tackles for loss. 12. No. PFF has him down for 12 pressures. For the amount that he blitzes, for that output to be 12 pressures.
Not good. How many times? I've messaged you during the game. I was like, I can't. They just keep bringing him up, and he just is running into a wall.
It's not that it's a bad thing to do, because they needed to do it, because they needed to have that fourth person, right? Like, they needed to bring in a basically another pass rusher, and he just never won. He did not win in that spot, and it's just like,
when it's
that,
like,
that production is really not good. It's not good. It's got to be better than that.
Agreed. At the same point, though, like, look, we all watch the same game. Like, the coaching staff seen even more than us. What did the staff see through the first 11 games of this season that made them think that was all of a sudden going to work? To just keep doing it over and over and over and over again. It's like, look, Marist had that one game against North Carolina in 2020 when he was able to run up, do that blitz, blow up players and But that was it. That was the last time we really saw that. We hadn't seen that at all this year. So it's like, that's the part when I look at, like, well, you know, what the coaching, what fault lies on the coaching staff, for the way that the defense played. That's one of them. Cause it's like, he hasn't shown you he could do that all year. So why do you keep calling the same thing for the same player? It's like, yeah, you got to get pressure, but it's like, if you have no evidence that play is going to work, what makes you think it's going to start working in week 12? So, like, mix it up a little. Do something different, right?
Because it's just the person that they mix it up with is not playing in the game.
With in terms of, like I said, the safety blitz, you mean?
The safety blitz. Right. You can't send a bunch of those sim pressures because you do all that with Bracey.
Right.
And you're doing all that with Hart in the back. I mean, so that's what I mean. It's like they were – I'll bet you because here's the other part. I was talking to Tim O'Malley about it because I asked him. I was like, what's going on with Bracey? And he's like, I have no idea. He's like, Bracey talked to us on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I'll bet you, and I haven't heard anything about this, I'll bet you they had to change the game plan.
That could be.
I'll bet you they did.
If he pulled the hammy late in,
if he pulled his hammy like on Wednesday or Thursday –
yeah.
I bet you they had to change it up because he spoke. If he wasn't going to play, why would he go to the availability after practice on Tuesday?
Yeah.
So something, let's say something happened on Wednesday. They have to change it. They have to change the game plan or they have to do something, right? Because now you're out Hart and Bracey.
Yeah.
You know, it's like these are your two or three top corners in this game like that. So to me, that's where it's like we have to do something that maybe there's no, like, we don't know that it will work, but it's the best way for us to get pressure and to have a player on the field who, because then it's like we have to do it with Marist, and then we have to have Kaiser and Bertrand out there. That's why we're playing 3-3-5, because we want to have Bracey out there, but it's like we have to protect Lewis and Mickey now. And Mickey obviously needed protection.
Yeah.
Because he was a freshman. He's a true freshman or not. He wasn't ready. I would say true freshman in that he wasn't ready to do it. It's not even fair to ask him to do it, right?
Right.
They wouldn't have done it anyway. They wouldn't have done it, right? If it was hard out, they would have put Bracey in there. So they had to play him and they had to protect him. He did not have a good game.
No.
He gave up 3 third down conversions. He had another penalty in the end zone that got wiped out, that got offset because someone was downfield. And then he had another, gave up a long third down catch, and then he pulled the face mask because it was another 15 yards, right? So it's just he did not have a good football game. They needed to protect him. And so they were really up against it in terms of what you can do, because with USC, you have to be aggressive. You have to be forceful. And Notre Dame they could not be in the way that they wanted. That's just I think that's just true. And so it was a bad circumstance. And then they had to have big performances that they didn't get. Right. They needed a big one from Foskey in the running game. Didn't really get it. And I'll give Foskey credit, man. He hustles his butt off. He really does. He chases things down. He plays hard, right? But he just didn't get it in the running game. They didn't get it from Jason Adamolola in the running game. They didn't get it from Howard Cross. They didn't get it from Bertrand, although Bertrand played pretty good. They certainly didn't get it from Marist. Mm-mm. And so you needed a big performance, and it didn't happen. And it's just a bummer. Like, it's just you needed it and you didn't get it. And it's like, well, you know, Notre Dame's just going to have to lose the football game. I mean, that's just like it. And that's what happens when you play a good team like that. Mm-hmm. They force you to play at a certain level. And if you don't, then you're going to lose.
Yeah. Many points out too, that just the lack of talent at different levels of this defense.
Like, if you're USC, to that point, if you're USC, what scares you? What are you scared of? Nothing.
You're not really
concerned about anything. And to be clear, I don't think Notre Dame was super concerned about USC on defense either. You know, but there's so much about the USC offense that scares you. You got to play passive. And and look at when you're Notre Dame, you can't tell me that they are. You go into a game like that completely confident. You know, you can't say you go into that game completely confident that you're going to get a performance from Drew Pine. And USC has the utmost confidence in their quarterback.
Right.
That's the other part. So it's just, it's a tough situation. Tough.
Yeah. So, but I mean, even going back, looking at the stats now too, like you just look at the linebackers on this team in general, like, you know, Maris, 49 tackles, like you said, and, you know, Kaiser had far fewer snaps, but he still only had 52 total tackles on the season. And you combine those two, their tackle for loss, they combined for 8 tackles for loss. That's 2/3 of your linebacking core. That gave you 8 tackles for loss on the season. It's not like, and this is where, I mean, you look at, you know, coming out of a game like this, especially because it's the last game of the season, you want to, I mean, it's just natural to kind of look ahead. And this is where, you know, somebody like a Jalen Snead or some of the other young linebackers, it's like you got to hope that they are going to become, that like one of them can become one of those game records. And I mean, that's the hope, right? I mean, you have Kali, who has flashed this year. I mean, look, Kali has played. You know what? Maybe I have it up on another window. I want to see the total snap counts for the season now, because Kali has played far, far fewer snaps than either of the other linebackers, and he has 2.5 tackles for loss. I'm going to load it up while I speak, but. It's just that, I mean, you look at, even like you look in the secondary, now granted the corners were banged up, so you don't want to talk about that, but like safety play, other than, you know, Xavier Watts, who had can you say he had a high low game? I mean, he made some great plays. He played great down the stretch, but he also, you know, showed some inexperience by, you know, missing at least one interception that was right there to be, you know, to be had. But it's like, how often are we talking about big impact plays from Notre Dame's safeties this year? Which we thought we would. Like, honestly, like, you think, you know, when Brandon Joseph, you know, transferred in, it was like, oh, okay, you know, we lose Kyle Hamilton, but we're getting this other playmaking safety. That's really good. But it's like you go through long stretches this season when, unless it was punt returning, which, you know, is news to Kirk Herbstreit, like his name just did not get called that often. And it's like you need playmakers in the back end of this defense. Obviously, Benjamin Morrison is one. But it's some sort of playmaking safety. If there was ever a game that made me realize how much Notre Dame really needs to sign Peyton Bowen, it was this game. Because he has that potential to be that kind of player. But it's just like across the board, it's like, I think your summation of Notre Dame having just a lot of like really good college players on defense is a really good analysis, or, you know, summation of the defense. Cause like, you can't point to anyone really any starter on the defense and just go like, you know, they're not that great. They probably wouldn't have started on a lot of Notre Dame defenses. Cause it's like individually, they're all pretty, the good college players. It's just not a lot of great. There wasn't a lot of players on defense who were great this year, who could change a game like that. And some of it's bad luck too. Like, come on. Like, look at Foskey makes the hustle play, knocks the ball out, and it's so close to,
right,
you know, to Notre Dame getting the ball. And it's like, ah, all right. You know, that happens for USC. Meanwhile, Drew Pine drops the ball with nobody around him, and, you know, it just, he can't fall on it, you know, fast enough, and USC is there and recovers. And it's just like, ah, come on. You know, and it's just all, then the missed interception by Watts. It's like, that made it as more frustrating too, because it's like Notre Dame had its chances in this game and just, they didn't make them. They didn't make the plays. So
Yeah, I mean, the one on the deep ball is the one that it's like, you got to catch that one.
Yeah, you just
got to catch it. Like, yeah, you got to. The one on the trick play, like, I kind of get it because he's running to a spot where the ball should go, and he turns.
And he's interfered with.
And he's interfered with, right? So, like Kyle Hamilton will make the play, but then again, he's a first-round pick, right? Yeah, and exactly. So, but, like, the other one is, like, you have to. He threw you a duck, man. He threw you a duck. You got to do it. You gotta come down with it.
And those are the plays you gotta make in a game like that.
And those are the plays you gotta make, right? So. And so it's like that. If that's a pick, if the fumble gets recovered by Notre Dame, you know, it's because it's just a bummer because like Foskey hustles down, makes the strip, like forces a fumble.
Yeah,
and it doesn't work out.
Great play.
And USC is completely out of position. Like if you look, if Pine hands off to Estime, he will run for. I don't want to say like a 20 yard. It's going to be a successful play if he hands off to Estime. If he pulls it, he is going to Michael. They did not cover Michael Mayer. He has him on a crossing route. He's wide open, but he just drops it, and USC just happens to be there, and they pick it up, and it's like those are the moments, right? Like those are the key moments we're talking about, where it's like. Where it's you look at and you say, man, Notre Dame, like 7.9 yards per play, right? Like they had a better success rate than USC did. But it's like you felt like we weren't in the game. And that's why, because of those moments that you didn't make. If you just flip them, if Notre Dame makes the pick, if Notre Dame recovers the fumble, and then they recover their own fumble and they don't make the pick, it's completely different. The game can just flip just like that. And you know, it's like that. That's the reason why we look at the Clemson game the way we do, because they blocked a punt that got returned for a touchdown. They had a pick six that went for a touchdown. You know, they had another interception. Like they made those plays.
Yep.
That led to points. They only scored two like true offensive touchdowns against Clemson.
Yeah.
Like they played much better offensively against USC than they did against Clemson, but the game just went a certain kind of way in Notre Dame's favor, and that's the difference between you win by 21 and you lose by 11. That's the difference.
Yeah, and I got this stat snaps littered up while you were talking there. Prince Kali, 123 snaps. And had, what did I say, 2.5 tackles for loss in limited snaps. Meanwhile, you had Bertrand at 521. Sorry, not Bertrand. Bertrand had 8 tackles for loss. You have, where's Kaiser here? I just had it right. Literally, 305, so more than double, you know, more than double the snaps. And Leofau, 601, like you said. So what is that? That's almost 4 times as many snaps as Kali. And, you know, 2 more tackles for loss than him. So hopefully some of these younger players, step up and can fill roles next year. We'll probably get into some of the questions of just, looking ahead. But you just got to get more production out of some of those units. Before we go to questions, so one player we haven't talked about on offense, somebody made me very happy that I want to bring up. Can you guess who I'm going to bring up?
Deion Colsey.
My man, Deion Colsey. He continued his late season ascent with some huge plays. He had the touchdown. He's just become a target on third downs and just makes first downs. I like when receivers do that. It's a really good trait to have when your receivers catch balls on third down for first downs. He ended up with 3 for 75 and the touchdown. And that comes after, you know, a couple week stretch where last week it was just the 1 for 23, Navy 2 for 50, and then the Syracuse 3 for 40, 3 for 44 after not registering a catch at all in, the first, what is that? 7 games of the season. So his ascent here has been fun to you know, fun to watch and encouraging for next year, because Notre Dame needs receivers for next year, or they need receivers to you know, to continue to develop for, you know, for next season. But the touchdown was a great catch. The third down that he caught was a good catch. He's playing good football. And the reason I also am going to bring him up all the time is because, like I said, there were other pods, other publications that were saying some things about Colsey in the beginning of the year. You know, that you just hear and you're just like, come on, you don't know those things. Like, you're not on, you know, in the locker room. Like, and it was like questioning, like, oh, he doesn't try hard enough, like things like that. And it really annoyed me at the time when I heard him, because I'm like, who are you to say those things, you know, without being in the wide receiver room, being at practice, you know, every day. So to see him step up towards the end of the season here, I thought has been awesome. And I hope he continues it. I think it was Jamie, actually, if I remember correctly, Jamie at ISD, who made a comparison between Colsey's end of season surge and Miles Boykin in 2017. Before Boykin had his huge 2018 season, and I would take that in a second if that is,
you know, who that was.
Who is that?
That was me.
Oh, was it?
On the post game show, yeah.
Oh, well, then you know what? I didn't watch the post game show because after.
Oh, maybe he put it in an article.
He did. He put it in an article, because I will tell you.
I said it on the post game show.
After losses, I can't listen to anything or read anything right in the aftermath. I need to sit in silence, have another beer, and take it in. So yeah, he put it in one of the articles. But that, so there we go. That is a great. I think it's a great. Great analogy there for Colsey, or comparison, I should say. So that was one really upsetting thing about Saturday night too, is that I had this nice little setup. You know, wife went out to dinner, had, you know, I got the baby to bed right away. Little guy fell asleep so fast. I put him to bed. I went to the bathroom and I went downstairs and I looked at the baby monitor and he was asleep. And I was like, okay. All right, he went right to sleep. I'm like, I'm going to have a beer before kickoff. This is great. Had some pizza. I'm like, look at this. Is it. This is great. I'm going to get to sit down and enjoy it. And then Notre Dame said, no, you will not enjoy this game. Anyway, great to see him, step up, you know, towards the end. Just in general, Jayden Thomas, too. Again, numbers aren't eye-popping, but, seeing him make some plays is great, because what it gives me encouragement for next season is Chauncey Stuckey specifically, because he, of all the new Notre Dame assistants, he got dealt the worst hand in terms of just numbers and rooms that he inherited. And to turn that unit into, you know, a pretty good, pretty functional unit by the end of the season, especially when you lose Avery Davis, who's going to be, you know, probably going to be your leading receiver at the wide receiver position. He wasn't going to outcatch Mayer. I think it's an impressive coaching job. So that's pretty good. And, you know, he's got three really good receivers committed, hopefully going to add a fourth. So it's like, okay, all right. Now it's even, you know, more encouraging, because you're like, we've seen him take couple players who didn't do too much last year and get them producing. So love to see it. Want more of it. And we'll probably talk. There's a question about other assistant coaches, in the questions that we got too. So we can cover that then. But before we go into questions, anything else that, you know, jumped out in this game that we haven't talked about?
Not really, because I looked over some of the questions. I think it everything else I wouldn't talk about that
is in the questions.
Is in the questions, yeah.
All right, let's just jump into them. All right, so let's go. No new reviews this week. I did check. No new. Oh, there's a lot of questions this week. All right, yeah. Let's jump. Let's jump right in. All right, we'll start off with Chris Jenkins, who I think is the first to ask a question, like pretty much every week. So thank you, Chris. You are always like, it's like him. He's in there. Our buddy Oscar, you know, is in there sometimes as well, quick with the quickness. But Chris, thank you as always. So he wrote, I'll admit I've done my fair share of bashing this season. Where the hell was this pine, you know, all season? Aside from the pick and fumble, he was pretty damn good. He says, the coming off season, which position should Notre Dame target in the portal, if any at all, and what bowl games do we get in? So let's start with Pine. I mean, you mentioned it. We've seen Pine look pretty damn good. It's just, it's been in shorts. I don't want to say short, you know, spurts, because it's like, it's been entire games. Like, North Carolina was the entire game. BYU was like, what was it? Was it three quarters?
It was the entire game.
All right, so full game for, you know, for BYU. But then it's like, then you go stretches where you're just like, oh, man, okay, not great. Not great again. Like, oh, okay, well, now we haven't seen that player in weeks. And this was like the first appearance of that Drew Pine, I think. That, I mean, to that level since then. So, I don't know. I think you kind of nailed it earlier. It's just like you can't count on that each week. Because he hasn't shown that he could be, you can deliver that in a consistency.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing, right? Like, that's what the problem is with most backup quarterbacks, is just consistency. You know, and you understand why you go into the Stanford game and they think, oh, we're going to be able to throw the ball because of what they did against North Carolina and
BYU.
And BYU, right?
Yeah.
Like, you watch this game and you think Stanford's a worse defense. Like, how did Notre Dame not do it in that game? You know, and so it just doesn't, I've said it before, it just doesn't have to make sense. You know, he is not a professional. He is not going to be an NFL quarterback. Mm-hmm. And so the variance is often is wide. And it's frustrating, you know, but, you know, Ryan, he makes a good comment, and I'll finish up my Pine thoughts at that point, because he makes kind of a good comment about it.
All right. Oh, so you want to get to that. Okay.
Yeah, you don't right now. It's whatever.
All right. Yeah. Well, because Chris had other questions too, but that also leads pretty good into Chris's second question is, you know, what positions do you think Notre Dame should dip into the portal? I think we both agree quarterback 100%.
Yes.
I would also say potentially defensive end / pass rusher, Viper, whatever, you know, whatever terminology, but a rush end of sorts.
Yeah. If you can get one, those guys are hard to find.
That's why I say potentially. Yeah. Yeah. Because without it, it's like you got Patello, who's played good in spurts, but he was like 90 snaps this season or something, really small number. So it's like, I don't know who's your starting, if not Patello, who's your starting Viper?
Well, I mean, they obviously want Justin Adamalola to come back. If he comes back, he'll probably start. You know,
that'd be ideal.
And it seems to make sense for him, you know, unless he doesn't want to.
He's not trying to get a draft.
You know, unless he wants to move on, his brother's going to move on, right? And maybe he wants to, but I don't know, man. You can be the starting Viper at Notre Dame. That's true. I mean, you can actually like think about having an NFL future. So
yeah,
I could see that. But yeah, I mean, a portal.
Any other position?
Portal guy. I mean, I would any skill player. You think is, I mean, they don't need a running back, so not running back, but like any skill player that
you think would start,
you think can help, like it start, help, whatever, you got to bring him in, right? Because I think Cam Hart's out. I think,
you do,
yeah, I think really? He's out. Yes, keeps getting hurt.
Oh,
keeps getting hurt, and I assume he doesn't like that. You know, like you can't get hurt for free in college anymore. Like you got to try to do it in the pros.
But you think he would get drafted right now?
I don't know. I'm just saying I think he needs to give it his shot, right? Like Kevin Austin didn't get drafted. He left, you know, I think he just has to. And he has to give it a chance because he keeps hurting his shoulder.
Yeah.
He's a bad shoulder, right? You gotta get out. I think he's out. I think Bracey's out. I think Brandon Joseph's out.
So I've had that conversation with some friends too. Again, I just don't know if Joseph leaves, like, where does he get picked in the draft? Does he?
Fifth round, sixth.
You think fifth round?
I don't know. I'm giving the best. Yeah. I mean,
he didn't have a good season. Here's the
thing: if it's fifth round, sixth round, he should come back.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. Like, at fourth round, he should come back, right? But yeah, like, these guys, they have decided. They've decided.
Yeah.
If you come and you say, I'm only going to be here for a year, I don't care what happens.
Yeah.
I'm going to, you know, bet on myself or whatever, then okay. Like, it doesn't, yeah, there's nothing you can do.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm not saying it makes sense. I'm just saying, I don't think he's going to be back. So the point is, it's like, you're going to have, Ben Morrison, you know, you have a couple freshmen coming in, you have Jaden Mickey, and maybe you can get him going, right? You'll have Clarence Lewis. But it's like, if you could bring in a guy who started games for, you know, like a real program, right? Like Nick McLeod started games for NC State, was a captain, right?
Yeah.
Someone like that. I think you got to do it. You know, yeah, I think you could bring in multiple guys, you know, because the other part too is like, you don't have to think about, the scholarship numbers, because Notre Dame is going to have a good number of players leave. So, you know, that's not going to be an issue. So bring in multiple, right? Bring in a receiver, bring in two receivers, anyone, like anyone you think can help you do it. You have to do it.
What do you think about tight end?
I mean, so you have Mitchell Evans, you have, obviously you have Raritan, you have Barong, you have Bauman, Barong and Bauman keep getting hurt. You have Stays, who they really like. I mean, between Raritan, Stays, and Evans, I think they have guys they can play. And I think to me, it's okay if they become less tight end centric in the passing game, right? Like, it's okay, right? Like, you have Michael Mayer, and he's unbelievable, right? So of course, like, you center it around him. But if you don't have to do that for a year, I think that's fine. You know, but again, if you have a tight end who you think can come in and play ahead of those guys, then you do it.
Right.
And so I think you do that. Any wide receiver, you know, I think it's kind of rare to find a linebacker. Frankly, they shouldn't have to.
No.
So it just, like, to me, those are the things. Like, get skill guys. You find a fast guy, bring him in. Bring in a fast guy. You know, they need more speed on this team.
What about interior D line? Would you go same?
I would. If you can find someone. The problem is, it's like, those guys are just like, how often is that becoming available?
Not right? Really. Yeah, exactly.
It's not very often. And the other part too is like, if it's a difference maker, like a real difference maker, then they're not going to come Notre Dame. They're going to go to some NIL school. Mm. You know, that's the other part. It's like, it's got to be like the certain kind of fit. So,
speaking of receivers, by the way, too, if you know, you said bring one in if you can. Dante Thornton entered the portal tonight from Oregon. Notre Dame was heavily in on his on his recruitment a couple of years ago, but he would only be he'd be going into his junior year.
I would bet that he's academically is not where he needs to be, not from a grade standpoint, but from like the classes that he's taken, where he needs to be
right
in terms of credits and that sort of thing.
For Notre Dame.
For Notre Dame, right. Maybe he's a great student, but in terms of the specifics of Notre Dame, I doubt he's there.
Right. Well, we'll see. It's going to be an interesting offseason too, to see if Freeman's able to get anything more through the portal than maybe in the past. Just because, I mean, I think there's been a lot of talk about that, because Notre Dame has not necessarily historically been the most accommodating with transfers. So we'll see if that changes at all. But I think Notre Dame definitely needs more impactful transfers than what they got this year, other than John Sott, who was a phenomenal.
Who was the GOAT?
Yeah, like the best punter since when? I don't know. Hunter Smith. When was the last punter Notre Dame had as good as Sott? Been some time.
Yeah.
So, all right. Oh, and last part of Chris's question is, what bowl game does Notre Dame get in?
I think it's the what is it? The Gator?
Gator. That's what I
it seems like too. It's the Gator or the Holiday.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like. So the Gator is an SEC team. The Holiday is a Pac-12 team.
Ooh, that could be interesting. Wonder which I didn't even look. Which potentially, what kind of matchup are we looking?
I think the Gator is, like, a lot of people are talking about South Carolina, which would be funny to end the year with two USC teams.
There you go.
And then I think in the Holiday, it's like UCLA, Utah, Washington, something like that.
All right.
So,
well, we'll see where the chips land in that regard. All right, here's Ryan, ND Text. Is this the comment you're talking about when you had referenced earlier?
Yeah.
Okay. So Ryan says, I tell you in August that Notre Dame will lose Buckner for the season, but Notre Dame manages to go 8-4 with a top 25 road win and a top 5 at home, or a top 5 win at home in Freeman's first season. I don't tell you where the wins or losses come. Do you take it? And in hindsight, do we feel good about this season?
All right. So, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, they're just going to talk it through. So, okay, the first part, Buckner, Buckner, you losing Buckner for the season is kind of self-explanatory. But the other part, so it says you get a top 25 road win and a top 5 win at home in Freeman's first season. So yeah. That means, I mean, looking at Notre Dame's schedule, that Clemson is the only, obviously that means that Notre Dame beats Clemson because there's no other home team right. That has possibility of being top 5. And then that means that a top 25 road win, you know, is probably either Ohio State, North Carolina. You could think if it's preseason, maybe BYU or USC. Right? Is there anybody else preseason that you'd be like, okay, that was probably the top 25 road win?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So then that means that you have to have lost 3 of those. To be 8-4, it means you have to have lost 3 of those games. I'm trying to, like, think what the scenario would be. Okay.
I'd be sad, because then it's like, after you beat North Carolina, it's like, oh, no. It's like, I know what it's going to happen. So, I think that scenario is right. I mean, the thing is, like, I think in the spirit of the question, I think in the spirit of it, you're basically saying, like, this was a pretty good outcome. And I completely agree, right? They started 0-2, and it's like now we have 2 games of Drew Pine. Or 10 games of Drew Pine, right? And you're 0-2. And you got to go on the road to North Carolina. You still got to play Clemson. You still got to play USC.
Yep.
Still at BYU, right? At the time, I mean, we all said what we said, right? This could be real. This could be bad.
Right.
And I think when you look back on it, he went 8-2. He played well. And he's not the reason they lost against USC.
Correct.
And I think to go through all that and you say, like, Drew Pine cost Notre Dame 1 game. He cost them Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But is that surprising? You know, is it surprising
that a backup quarterback cost
that,
a game?
That he ended up costing blowing a game that they shouldn't have?
Yeah.
It's not. It's really not. You know, and so you go through all that. And frankly, I would, to be clear, if he had to blow a game, I'm glad it was the Stanford game.
I'm not.
I'm glad it was.
I'm not. That means now, because now that David Shaw is out, it means David Shaw's last game against Notre Dame was a win for him. I don't like that.
Who cares? Like, it doesn't matter.
I don't
care about that. See, to me, it's like he win the games that like actually mean something.
Yeah.
You know, like that game didn't mean anything really at all. You know, and so
you win that game, you're 9-3.
What I'm saying is, if he had to blow a game, I'm glad it was that. So in this version, they're blowing a game regardless. Like I would rather he blew Stanford than if he blew the Clemson game.
What about at this point, this is hindsight. I'd rather he just have blown the USC game because he played, you know, out of his mind and it didn't matter. Like, you know, it wasn't enough. So. I would have taken.
It's a fair take. It's a fair take.
So, I mean, the question, though, in terms of the spirit of, like, do we take it and do we feel good about the season? And it's like, I don't know that I would say I feel good about the season. Like, do I feel like, oh, my God, this is heading in the wrong direction? You know, sound the alarms. No. But at the same time, I definitely am not. You know, sitting here saying, like, I feel great about this. I think the season shone a light on some of the deficiencies in the roster that we've known were there that Notre Dame's been able to mask either by having, like, a generational talent on defense that makes up for a lot of deficiencies, Kyle Hamilton, or just, you know, good coaching over the last and winning, you know, winning the winnable games. And I think that's one thing too that stood out in this game to me is that, like, you look at USC and it was like the difference in the game was Caleb Williams just being Caleb Williams. And one, it shows just why you need a great quarterback. But how it could just mask other things. And it's not the same goes on defense. You have Jalen Smith on this defense. It masks a lot. You have Kyle Hamilton on this defense. It masks a lot. And that's what Notre Dame needs more of. And I think this season kind of shone a light. We talked about the linebackers and it's like, well, these were your linebackers last year. This is what they did this year. And it's like, well, they didn't really have a whole lot of production, right? There's holes in the secondary and bad recruiting that, you know, happened years ago, not just recent, is why Jaden Mickey got thrown into the position that he is. There's a lot of corners on the roster. There's a good number of corners on the roster that are older than Jaden Mickey, who've been in the program longer, who the staff didn't feel comfortable putting out there.
Yeah.
And it's like that receiver. You know, what it was, 7 receivers at one point this season, or healthy receivers, whatever the number was. And it's like you look at it and you're like, okay, there were definitely more holes on the roster, I think, than any of us really wanted to admit. And I think that's what also, like, having a backup quarterback just exacerbated all of those holes because you're like, oh, yeah, we don't have, you know, a ton of receivers. We don't have this. We don't have that. So I think that's where I think I would feel much, much, much worse if we didn't have the number 3 recruiting class in the country right now, according to all the rankings. Because it's like that's what we learned this year. That was the biggest learning this year, is that you need talent infusion. So, and we're probably not going to get it solely through the portal like USC did or some of these other programs. So,
yeah.
Next up, we got Oscar. At Vamos Irish. So G, B, and Y from the questions last week, by the way, are short for the good, the bad, and the yummy. So he tells us that this week. So this says good / bad. Pine had an 88% completion rate, but 2 turnovers. Which turnover do you replace with 6 drops for a 66% completion rate? So I think he's saying in this scenario, you take away one of those turnovers, the completion percentage is going to drop to 66%. You're going to get 6 fewer catches. Which would you do? Which turnover would you replace? I'm going the fumble.
Yeah, you want to you want to replace the fumble, but like, I don't know what drops I'm replacing.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's, they're kind of important, right?
Right.
Like, that's why Notre Dame was winning the game, or I'm moving the ball.
Right.
So, yeah, but I mean, if I'm if I have to replace a turnover, I'm replacing the fumble.
Yeah,
definitely.
All right, now we got bad slash good. Notre Dame only stopped USC from scoring on two drives. How many holds accounted for a repeatedly loose Caleb? Too many. I don't have an exact number, just too many.
Yeah.
All right, next question. This is from the yummy category. It says best leftover turkey usage, which now we will, this could go into a couple of directions, but best leftover turkey usage, possible leftover turkey ideas, sandwich, pot pie, broth, soup, tacos, buffalo dip, enchiladas, tiki masala, Alfredo, just off the top of the noggin. Yeah, drop your turkey take.
I don't like turkey.
Yeah, I know. So is there any
take?
Is there any?
I will say I do like I'll eat dark meat turkey. That's fine. I like dark meat turkey.
So
I don't like white meat. But it's so it, to me it's just there's not it's just kind of it doesn't have I don't know, it doesn't have the flavor that I like. I don't know. I don't know what to say. It's a taste.
So you thing. Would not put but it I, in any leftover then?
I mean, I will. So I always love, and if you give me dark meat turkey, I will do this. I love the day after, like Thanksgiving bowl.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like you get all the like the cream corn, and you get the. Oh, but we do rice pilaf.
Oh.
So you do rice pilaf. It's an Armenian thing. My mom makes really good rice pilaf. So it's we do that cream corn, rice pilaf, get a couple of yams, mash those up. You get some mashed potatoes, throw that in there. You throw some gravy in there, throw some stuffing in there. And then you could throw some, you know, you could throw some of the turkey in there and you mix it around. You throw it in the microwave and you eat it and it's just delicious. You know, I had a couple of those with ham, right? So it's that's awesome. That's to me, that is the best day after. To me,
I mean, that's probably like the only thing I think I've ever done, really, like that style of just like heat up a bunch of stuff and eat it all together. But now I'm intrigued about the idea of possibly making pot pie with turkey leftovers next year. But I would also have to host. I did not host this year. We ended up going to my parents' house. Little guy was feeling better by Thanksgiving, so we were able to, you know, to make the trip. But yeah, you kind of need to host to have all the leftovers. So. All right. As always, thank you for the questions, Oscar. We got Robbie Knee Neighbor at Big Scrob underscore Scrob asking one ideally or sorry, what is the ideal starting secondary next year? Does a freshman crack the lineup again? I'm going to let you go first because secondary is your domain.
Should a freshman? So the starting secondary. I mean, it's hard because I think I do think they're going to get someone from the portal.
Okay, I don't know so you could say it portal.
Just, I'll say portal. I would say Ben Morrison. I would say Ben Morrison, Xavier Watts, fingers crossed, Peyton Bowen.
Yeah.
And then portal. That's what I would say.
Okay, and what about Nickel? You think Mickey?
I would say Mickey or Lewis. I would probably say Lewis, actually.
Okay.
I mean, maybe even Portal then, to be honest. Like two guys. I could see two guys if they like them, you know?
Yeah. All right.
You just because you need time. Because first of all, like you're going to have some defections there.
Yeah, and there's too many.
It's just because I think they should ask DJ Brown to come back. I think they'll have Ramon Henderson back, but they're gonna lose Griffith, they're gonna lose Joseph, and they're gonna lose. I feel like there's one other player, or maybe there isn't.
No, but I mean,
Cam's gone, Bracey's gone. So, like, there's just not going to be a ton of numbers, and you need, like, is it possible that like Christian Gray or Micah Bell come in and they are like really good? Yes, that's possible. Sure, yeah. Like Ben Morrison, but like you don't count on that. So to me, it's like you got to bring in a couple guys to give those other young kids room to get ready to go. In my opinion, I mean, but I don't know. Like maybe Jaden Bellamy, like maybe they really like him or something. You know?
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything about him, but maybe they like him.
There's a lot of freshmen sophomores in the secondary that we haven't heard a lot of or heard. So yeah. The secondary in general is going to be really interesting to watch, I think, this offseason. I think you mentioned names that are probably going to leave because of, you know, they're going to take the next step. I wouldn't be surprised if there was, you know, a name or two, you know, of those ranks that entered the portal, you know, from Notre Dame's, or, you know, to leave Notre Dame, because there's just so many that have been passed up already. That's like, you're looking at that and you're like, okay, well, I'd like to start somewhere. It doesn't seem like it'll happen. So, where does Mayer rank on your all-time players list? At least an above X, but below Y type of thing. So it's not tight ends. Just players.
Right.
I was trying to think of this. So like if we stick on offense, he's at least above Floyd for me at this point. Which is high praise because Floyd is a touchdown leader.
I mean, I think the thing about Mayer is that he was, first of all, he was dependable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what, one game?
Yeah.
In his career that I can recall off the top of my head. So there's that. And he wasn't any like sort of drama.
Well,
he was immediately good.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things like you see him and it's like he was really good in the All-American game. It's like, hey, this is Michael Mayer, dude. He's awesome. And then it's like kind of like Kyle was the same way. You know, the only thing with Kyle was he got hurt.
Yeah.
And that kind of puts a damper on everything. And Mayer, that didn't happen. But like Kyle, the thing with him, it was like, it was, you know, hey, this Kyle Hamilton, he's a dude. Yeah. And then he comes in and he's a dude, right? And so Mayer was the same, which is like a cool thing, right?
Yeah.
And so he's up there, right? I mean, he's way up there.
Yeah.
Because like
who's still above him for you?
Well, I mean, Kyle will always be. He's number one.
Okay,
for me.
That's on brand. Kyle not included. Who else is above
Mayer? So if Kyle is not included, I mean Kyron is above him.
Oh, okay.
I mean Kyron. I mean who doesn't love Kyron? I mean he's another one where it's like, Jesus. I mean he came in and was like, I mean he made the 2020 season out of nowhere. That was the other part. Is like that. That's where it's like Kyron was. It was like he was nobody in 2019, and then in 2020 he's like their most important player.
Right.
I mean, when does that ever happen? So Kyron's above him. Won't mention Kyle. I think Will Fuller is above him.
Wow. Okay.
I just love Will. Now we're just getting to personal preference in terms of just like, I loved Will Fuller, the player. And plus I was telling people that he was going to be awesome. I mean, this was pre like Twitter and even blogging. So, there was just like people in my life. I was like, hey, this Will Fuller guy, he's legit. And so then he blew up.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think at that point though, and then there's like Q, guys like that, who are, I guess Q and Mayer are pretty much the same, honestly. So I think I would say Kyle, Kyron, Fuller, and then Mayer at that point.
Okay.
And then like JOK and Jalen and Manti.
Below Mayer.
Yeah, those guys are probably below Mayer. And just in terms of my own personal, like.
Yeah. Like, he's up there. I would say for me, I would probably still have Jalen above because you know my thoughts on Jalen.
Right.
And the crimes that Brian Van Goiter committed, wasting his talents. But who else? So I would say he's up there. He's probably like he could be a top 10 for me in terms of players that I like. And just because he was dominant. Teams knew that at times that's all Notre Dame had. Beginning of the season, you know, Colsey hadn't broken out yet or started to really play. Thomas hadn't broken out yet. Styles was struggling a little bit. And it's like we had Mayer and Mayer only and still couldn't stop him. And he's just flat out dominant. So very high in the pantheon of Notre Dame players for me. Third question from Robbie. Coffee preparation preference and top breakfast pastry.
Preference.
Yeah, how do you take your coffee, basically?
Well, I mean, I do. We have a Keurig, mm-hmm. But that's like convenience.
Yeah.
Not preference, I guess.
Right.
I think I mean, my dad. I like how he does it. He does. He has a drip coffee maker.
Yeah.
So when we go on vacation, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
So that way, probably, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I think he means like cream, sugar, milk.
Oh, soy milk. Oh, I do. So I always do. Oh, if that way, I think we're talking about. I do Coffee Mate. So I do.
Okay.
I do like combination flavors.
Okay. So you like a little on the sweet side. That's what you're saying.
Oh yeah, for sure. I definitely need the sweet stuff.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it's the sugar free too, because I don't like all those calories.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I always do like kind of a combo. So I always do vanilla. I always do vanilla, French vanilla. And then I either will like share it with hazelnut or like right now we have the peppermint mocha.
Okay.
Given the season. And that's really exciting. So I'm very excited about that. Yeah, so I'm very excited about that. So that's what I do. Yeah, I like the sweet version.
I drink way too much coffee in a given day to put that in, to put the sweetness in. I will make like almost a full pot of coffee in the morning. My wife will have like a cup, maybe a cup and a half sometimes. And then I just kind of drink the rest. And then sometimes have an afternoon coffee if I'm tired. Which tomorrow is going to be an afternoon coffee kind of day. I can already feel that because one, my time reference for this pod, it's getting late here on the East Coast. I put in a lot of hours on the house and the Christmas lights, Greg, and I'm a little tired. It was a long few days trying to get the lights done, but it was a big success. Yeah, the neighbors over tonight. We made some spiked hot chocolate. We played some music as the lights went on. It was a nice little time. Got a lot of compliments. House looks great, but I'm very tired, so I'm gonna need a lot of that coffee in the morning. Final tally, by the way, 80 sets of lights. I was very happy about this.
I saw the picture, man. It's pretty legit. I have to say, it's pretty awesome.
Thank you. I literally had a neighbor come up to me this morning while I was finishing it, say like, he's like, my husband got on a ladder and put lights on our house for the first time since we've lived here because of all the lights you put up, and he felt like he needed to do something. I was like, hey, all right. That's kind of what I was going for, because my neighborhood doesn't really go that nuts. And then we moved in and just started putting up an insane amount of lights. So I'm hoping we get more neighbors to join in. But love Christmas lights. Love it. Love it. Love it. Top breakfast pastry, though, too. We didn't, Robbie asked that as well. I mean, mine's croissant, just straight. It's basic, but I just love a croissant.
Let me think. I like, breakfast pastry. I mean, it's hard to not say donut. I'm trying not to say donut.
Right. It's what you like.
But it's what I like, but I feel like there's almost like a better answer that I didn't think of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say, I probably say buttermilk donut.
Okay.
That's probably what it is, but like glazed buttermilk donut. I like that.
There we go.
I like it with the coffee. Like, I spell like that with coffee.
Really the sweet tooth, my friend. See, I want, yeah. I go with the croissant, a little more savory. And then, yeah, just, oh, wait, I didn't even, wait, did I didn't answer. I just said I drink a lot of coffee. I didn't say, I just go like a little bit of milk, a little bit of whole milk, nothing else. No sugar, nothing else. Just a little bit of milk. Yeah, no, I go on the more savory side when I can. All right, we have to plow through some of these questions because it is getting late. We got Chris Scheiber. We already covered this one, but we're going to read it because you asked it, Chris. Outside of quarterback, would D end and D tackle be the next biggest needs in the portal? I mean, we talked about needs in the portal. I don't know that we think it's the next biggest. Maybe D end if you could find one, but you know, maybe more at the skill positions would be the next biggest.
I would say no, because the caliber of player that you're going to get at those spots
is generally not
doesn't
great.
Meet right. So I don't think so. In theory, yes, but the caliber of guy that you're probably getting at the skill spot is going to be higher than you would at the end or D tackle. That'll end up at Notre Dame. Now you have to think about who's ending up at Notre Dame.
Right. All right. So we got ND1N93 says clearly. The highs and lows of the 2022 season will be the foundation chapter of Freeman's legendary, definitely getting a statue career anthology. How cool is that? What will be your favorite memory to savor when reading that book to the grandkids?
Reading the book to the grandkids. I mean, I don't know. You go. You go first.
All right. Let's see. So my favorite moment in that book, the 2022 season, as I'm reading it, it might be the Stanford game and how it got me to just in a IPA-induced induced moment, just question all things that I do related to the website. That might be, I don't know if that'll make the book, but that might be my interjection to the grandkids when I'm reading them the book, in terms of the low points, and how it got better. Other than that, I mean, the high point would be the Clemson game, obviously.
Yeah.
The Brian Mason chapter of blocked punts. That could be a fun part.
Career anthology. How cool is that? What would be your favorite memory to savor when reading the book to the grandkids? My favorite memory to savor. The foundation. I'm trying to like get to the theme of it. The foundation. I think the Stanford game is probably right in terms of like he answered a question afterwards. He's like, I don't understand what happened and I don't know why, but we're gonna get it figured out.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where it is in terms of the foundation. I mean, it'd be hard for me personally not to include the fact that I went to my first game.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Like, I would probably talk about that in terms of, like, the snow. But, yeah.
All right. Where are we at here? Speaking of reading, I will say, little guy, our little guy is, like, just getting into really enjoying, like, book time. Or, you know, or not book time. Story time. The end of the day. And it's pretty wild. It's like literally just happened in like a blink. We like took the last bottle away and now all of a sudden like dude just like crawls up on my lap, leans back, like puts his head on my shoulder and like just leans back and is like, okay, read to me. And I'm like, this is pretty cool. So I was actually looking the other day. I got to see do they have Notre Dame like kids books that we can get. I should just Google this. But
there's the one that's promoed right now. The Mike Brown, the former Leprechaun.
Okay.
He wrote a children's book.
There we go.
We should get him to sponsor the pod.
I might
like
have
he literally just you
he
you
might have reached out at some point years back. Because wait,
well, no, he just wrote write it. Another I mean, it book? Just came out. It literally just came out.
Okay, because there was another former Notre Dame leprechaun that I know that had reached out about a book, but that was not a children's book. That was more like, well, my life is the Notre Dame leprechaun. All right, we'll look into that. Yeah, because need to read him some Notre Dame stuff at night. All right, we got Peter Smith at his Peteness. Two questions. Is there a coach on the hot seat for the lackluster job this year? And then says D-line coach, question mark. I don't think there is, because I think one thing this team really needs is consistency after last year. And I don't think there's any one position coach that I could look at right now and just say, like, you did a bad job, right? There's no Dell Alexander from last year or Brian Polian from last year where you're just like, whew, okay, you just did not do a good job. I mean, the D-line wasn't as good, I think, as we had hoped it would be, but I don't look at that as like a just 100% Al Washington problem.
I think of all, if you were going to come up with a coach, I think he would be the one.
Yeah.
Not just that, but you got to think about, like, he didn't land Keon Keeley.
That's true.
And I don't think Marcus is, I think Marcus is a, like, I need you to produce. I don't care what the reasons are, you know, like, I think he looks at it like that, which is, I don't know if he actually is on the hot seat, but if anyone is, I could see it being him.
I mean, if it would be, because I mean, yeah, it's not going to be Stuckey. It's not going to be Harry. It's not going to be Parker. It's not going to be McClellan. It's not going to be O'Leary or Mickens. It's not going to be Golden or Reese. And that's everybody, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Reese is on the. I don't think Reese would be on the hot seat.
No,
but I could see him. I could see him being kind of like not on the staff.
Well, yeah, but that's because like there could be multiple coaches that could leave, you know, for jobs that are open. But yeah. I don't know that there'd be any that were forced out.
Yeah.
So next question from Pete, from Peter is, which transfer portal player does Notre Dame have a legitimate chance of getting, and who is your pipe dream choice? I mean, it's too early. I think it's really too early to know, like, I mean, today was like the first day that like players really started.
Yeah. Playing. I don't know who's in the portal that.
Who's your pipe dream like quarterback though? Do you have one?
I do.
Who is?
Well, I don't know if this player's in the portal yet.
Well, that's fine. It's a pipe dream.
I think DJ Uiagalelei.
Really?
Mine. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I think the Clemson offense stinks. And I think that he would do really well at Notre Dame. Really well.
All right. That would be something. He's one. He's the one. Me and some friends. Oh, Devin Leary. If he enters the portal, I think that's
the
one.
See, he's hurt.
Yeah, I know. But
like, just like I, cause so like the specifics of that. He tore his pec. He can't play. He can't practice in the spring. Like, to me, that's just like a non-starter.
Yeah.
And regardless of the player, right? I just don't like it. I don't like that. You gotta be able to. You got to be able to practice in the spring, man. If you can't, then I just don't think it's going to work. So.
Well, did I remember this right? He did. That's right. Cohn was there for the spring in 2020.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? Okay. All right. DJU. That would be interesting. All right. We'll see. Again, he's also not in the portal right now. But. We'll see what happens with Clemson.
I mean, they have a conference championship game to play. You know, like, he's not going to come in.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, but other than that, I don't think there's not enough players in. Like Dante Thornton, that'd be cool, right? Hype dream at receiver because Notre Dame was in after him 2 years ago. But I think we'll have a better idea in a week or so. But names are flying in fast now. All right. We got at Golden Domer 28. Was this year one step back to go two steps forward? And will you offer therapy sessions if Michigan wins the Natty? Michigan's not winning the Natty, so don't worry about that. I don't think. But do you think this was one step back to go two steps forward?
For Notre Dame?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And do you think, when do you think those, do you think it's like two steps forward starting next season? Or, because I think it's one step back. I don't know that it's going to be two steps forward right away. Like, that's how I would answer this. Like, I don't think it's necessarily like, oh, hey, next year is automatically two steps forward. Just because I think, like I said, we talked about the roster and the holes that we're seeing and get exposed in games like, you know, USC.
Yeah.
And next year's schedule is not any easier.
I guess it'll be hard for me to answer that. Like when they'll take the steps forward. I need to see how they assemble the roster first.
Yeah. It's a whole new, not a whole new world, but yeah, it's just, it's wild thinking like how much roster change is expected now versus like 3-4 years ago.
And yeah. Like, just, like you, see, teams could have just completely different outlook, just completely different. I mean, look at USC. Mm. I mean, it's completely different. Right. Like, it's just hard to even project, you know, other than like, you know, just the, you kind of know the bones of what Notre Dame's going to be. Mm. Right. But it's like one guy, you know, one guy can change so much.
Yeah.
So
DJU could be that guy. All right, moving forward, we got Nick Buchholz. Why do we subject ourselves to this pain? You know why? I don't know why, actually.
You know why, Frank?
Why is it?
Because it's part of the human condition.
It is. Yes. It's just sports in general. Like
because you get the pain, but then you get however you felt after Clemson or during Clemson.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen that often for most sports.
But it's it's part of the human condition, Frank.
I know. Hey, I'm saying this as like, you know, again, somebody whose pro teams have not won that many championships in his lifetime either. So I don't know. I don't know. I wish I didn't subject myself to this pain as much, to be perfectly honest. Like, I wish, I'm actually envious of somebody who can watch a game when it's their team and just sit there like calm. And like not get crazy and not get all into it. I am jealous of those people because that is not me, as you all know, especially in the moment of the game itself. But I don't know. We do out of loyalty. I don't know. This is what we've always, I don't know. It's, you know, what I know I have, at least for me, I've just, it's what I've done every Saturday and Sunday since I was a kid. And it's like, well, I'm not going to change. So you roll with it.
Man, like it's part of it. It's part of the human condition, man. Humans, we feel despair and we feel elation.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not feeling that, then what are you doing here?
Good point. All right, we got 14 personnel at 14 personnel ND says, how do you evaluate the poor linebacker play on Saturday? Poor scheme, victims of subpar line play, or downright poor execution generally? I mean, we talked a lot about the linebackers already this pod, but I think it's it could be a little combination.
They played a bad football game. You know,
yeah, but it wasn't the first time.
There was a lot on their plate. There was a lot on their plate, and they weren't up for it.
Right, right. But it's not just the first time this season. I think that's why it's like, you look at the linebacker play at Notre Dame this season, and there hasn't been a ton of game-changing plays from that unit, from any of them. And it's like, that's where I think Notre Dame fans are questioning, you know, the group as a collective unit, so to speak. There's no JOK on this roster. There's no Jalen on this roster, which we know. But it's like, you know, even Bertrand's numbers were off from where they were last year. And it's like, okay, that's interesting. Like Kaiser's numbers, I shouldn't say, I have to take a look at his exact numbers. But it's like the numbers aren't there. I mean, even you add up, what did I say, Kaiser and Leafau had 8 tackles for loss, combined for 8 tackles for loss. And Bertrand, I think, had 8 as well. So your 3 starting linebackers combined on the season to give you just over 1 tackle for loss a game. It's not gonna, you know, that's not the production that you want out of your starting linebacking group. So, I mean, some of it is, and I think one thing we've talked about on the pod before that does get overlooked was the third defensive scheme in 3 years for a lot of these players. That is a lot of change. And that is why I say, and you could tell the beginning of the season, most of them were not playing fast. They were not reacting, or they were reacting. They were thinking, not reacting. And it started to get better towards the end of the season. And then it was just like, Saturday was a bad game. So I think we'll see. That's why I say consistency needs to be kind of the theme of this offseason, since last season, like the whole theme of last offseason was chaos, not consistency. So we got a question here from Joel at Voluntary Joel 41. I've started listening to y'all's pod this season. I love it and want to thank you both for great insights and some levity. Thank you, Joel. Speaking of which, rank this season's villains. Caleb Williams, because he's good. The entire Marshall football team. David Shaw. Kevin Austin's knees. So I say when we rank them, like, least villainous to most villainous. That's how I say we'll do this.
I mean, least to most, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. What was Kevin Austin's knees? I don't get that one. What is that?
I think because it's like, if maybe he comes back, if he hadn't had the injuries, and we really could have used Kevin Austin.
Oh, you mean so offense. Maybe his feet? Maybe is that what he's talking about? His feet?
Yeah.
He had feet problems.
That's true.
So I guess so that one's least.
That's what I would say, least.
Then Marshall, then David Shaw, then Caleb Williams.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I hate David Shaw. but Caleb Williams was just the number one villain. Especially, they show him walking into the Coliseum in his suit with no t-shirt on underneath. And I'm just like, what is this? No. Looked like a villain. Looked like a villain in a movie where you're like, well, this guy just looks like the bad guy. And then he was. And he ruined our nights. And I don't want to say ruined the season, but he made the season end on a down note. I don't know.
I mean, it's super vexing because, like, he's the king of the portal all-stars.
Yeah.
It like, really bugs me to no end. Honestly, yeah. I don't. It's like,
you know what? I saw him and I was like, that guy is very LA. How the hell did he ever go to Norman, Oklahoma in the first place with Lincoln Riley? And I was like, he belonged in LA. So,
yeah,
that made it even worse. All right. Next question. Shannon Neely at Neely_Shannon. Knowing how much we struggled stopping the run playing dollar last year, was the amount of 3-man front we played Saturday the best strategy? No, in retrospect, obviously, but
I think given what there was going on in the back, I think it was the best strategy to protect those guys, I guess. Yeah. I don't think they would have done it if everyone was healthy.
Yeah.
So,
which is unfortunate.
Yeah. But,
next question is from Austin Bradley. Says, what helped with the loss more? USA defeating England 0-0 or Texas A&M beating LSU? For me, Texas A&M beating LSU, because I'm not going to lie. I definitely
the second one.
Yeah, I don't care for soccer. I make no, you know, if you like soccer, that's great. Good for you. Like, you know, everyone likes what they like. I do not. I haven't watched. I think I had the one World Cup game on for about 4 to 5 minutes while I was working one day. But other than that, haven't watched it. Seeing Brian Kelly lose with a chance in the playoffs, just there for the taking for him. Potentially. I mean, obviously he still was going to have to beat Georgia, but ranked fifth in the country going into a night game against a team that had 5 wins that hadn't put up 30 points in over a month. And you lose. And not only do you lose pretty bad. Like, to a team that couldn't score, that fired its offensive coordinator a day after. Like, oh, that was great. That was, love that. I was loving that while Notre Dame was losing. So that made
I'm kind of bummed because the timing of it, like, so LSU beats Bama the same night that Notre Dame beats Clemson
forever.
So kind of like, so that, like, he kind of took away the shine. He kind of took away the shine, and then LSU suffers just like a terrible, embarrassing loss. Like, the night Notre Dame loses to USC, and it's like, so I can't really enjoy it.
I still enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, but it's like I couldn't, you know, couldn't really, really. So
it's really funny too, seeing like the LSU fans' reaction, which is, I was like, okay, it's interesting. Like, most were just like, oh, whatever. And I get they were playing with house money and they had low expectations, but it's like, you went on the road and you lost to a team that hasn't been able to, like, beat anybody.
Yeah.
In a long, so good job, Brian. Good to see your road night game problem has not gotten a whole lot better down in the bayou. But anyway, a couple more questions before we can tie this one. Oh my God, this might be our longest pod ever. Evan here says, assume one coordinator stays and one goes. Who would you want to stay?
Reese.
Okay. Interesting. I'm going to say Golden, and I'll tell you why briefly. you can't have 4 defensive systems in 4 years on this team. You just can't. Whereas I think Reese looked at some other jobs last year and the writing's on the wall that, like, he's probably not long for this staff, even if he makes it through this offseason. So you're going to probably bring in a portal quarterback. So you're going to bring in somebody who's got to learn a new system anyway, that, you know, they to run it. So I think from that perspective, I would say have Golden. So at least there is some consistency on the defensive side of the ball. And then Evan also says, Frank, what's your favorite Vermont brewery and or beer? That's a great question. Because you guys haven't noticed, you didn't hear the beer open today. I actually did not have a beer on this pod because, again, was a little tired from all of my Christmas lights. And if just between Notre Dame games, Eagles late games and other things, just I needed a break. But great question. Vermont breweries, love Alchemist and Heady Topper. I've only had it a few times, but it is a great beer. Hard to find around me. So when I see it, I do get it. In terms of other breweries, Vermont has so many. Lawson's is great. I like Burlington a lot. When I actually looked up this earlier, there was one that surprised me. Now I can't remember that. I didn't even realize it was from Vermont that I liked a lot. But Vermont is the land of beers. Greg, I don't know if you knew that, since I know you don't necessarily like. That. Since you do not necessarily like beer. But they have some absolutely phenomenal beers up in Vermont. There's another one that I was like, oh, I did not realize they were from Vermont. Zero Gravity. Really like Zero Gravity Spears. And there was another one that I've drank a bunch of times without realizing it was from Vermont. What one was it? Oh, Frost Brewery. I like theirs a lot. And I'll give you one more that I enjoy, and that's Long Trail. Even though their beers are not the greatest, I stayed at the Long Trail Inn in Vermont before, so it is more sentimental value. So there you go. Those are my Vermont beer recommendations. Perfect. I'm going to mispronounce his last name. And I know how you're going to answer this, but we have from Joseph Rimas. Sorry, Joseph, I'm terrible with phonics. Would you guys be more or less excited about next year's offense if Tommy Rees is gone? Based on your last answer, I'm going to say you're going to be less excited if Tommy's gone.
I mean, I don't know, right? Like, it
depends who you replace him with.
Yeah.
You're like a Joe Brady.
I don't know. It's hard for me to. Joe Brady, he's overrated. I like Tommy Rees.
Yeah.
I like him. I want it to work. So there's that.
I mean, I tweet, you know, things at Tommy when during the games when plays aren't working, but he hasn't necessarily really had a time where he's had an established quarterback. Now, part of that is his problem. Like, he's responsible for quarterback recruiting. So the fact that he hasn't had one, you know, run his offense. You know, other than, I mean, he inherited Ian Book, but, you know, since then, you know, he has not had a, you know, what you would say an elite quarterback, Heisman caliber quarterback. So it would be interesting to see him with that, because he does call there, like you pointed out some of the plays on Twitter, the third and two where Diggs is wide open and Pine doesn't see him. That's a great play call. Why can't I think of the name? The jet sweep to Diggs on the first failed third down attempt ended up being a great play call. When I watched that live, I was like, what the hell was that blocking scheme? Because all I saw was two or three USC defenders in the backfield immediately. And I was like, well, that, you know, that didn't look like it worked. But then when you broke it down and showed, oh, it was, you know, the one big missed block kind of opened everything up there for USC. It's like, oh, that actually probably was going to be a pretty big play if it was blocked. So, he makes good calls. I think the thing that frustrates me about Tommy Rees is sometimes I think he makes great calls that doesn't necessarily totally take into account the personnel, which I think Brian Kelly did this too, where it's like Brian Kelly would call these plays with when Tommy Rees was quarterback, where you're like, you don't have Tom Brady back there or whoever, right? You have Tommy Rees. Call the game for Tommy Rees. And I feel like Tommy does that at times too and has asked Pine to do some things. He got better at it, you know, as the season wore on, but, that would be my main complaint about Tommy Rees. Naza Green asks us, is there any foreseeable changes in the staff over the next 2 months? Foreseeable? I'm going to say no, but I think that there will be. I don't think Notre Dame's going to make it unscathed. I think some assistant is going to get a promotion somewhere. Would you agree?
I would say it's, I mean, I don't know who it would be, but I think it's probably likely.
Yeah. So I think they might, if you look at it, you know, somebody like Stuckey, McClellan, they are not necessarily, after 1 year, probably going to get an OC job. So maybe it wouldn't be them. Harry is not going anywhere. Parker was an offensive coordinator, you know, before, but it's like, is he really going to, I don't know where he would go after one season at Notre Dame. And then it's like O'Leary's young. He's probably not, you know, quite at that level yet. Cause what's his next step for him is going to be a defensive coordinator. He's not going to probably get that opportunity. Mickens. I don't know. Maybe somebody would give Mickens that, but it'd have to be like, he probably needs some more time. Rees is the one I think that is the most likely to get offered OC job in the NFL or head coach somewhere in college.
Yeah.
All right. We got Guy Tech Fury. Guy Tech Fury asks, which was more damaging to Notre Dame's chances? The defense not being able to stop the run or reliably tackle, or the offense starting slow and turning the ball over twice?
The first
one. Yeah. Well, I think in that scenario, I would actually say the second one, with the acknowledgement that that's not fair to the offense. Because you knew that you couldn't start slow and you couldn't turn the ball over. So it's like, yeah, when they other outside of the slow start and turning the ball over, like the offense moved the ball up and down the field. But because of the slow start, you were in the 10-0 hole. And because you turned the ball over twice, you ended up going down three scores with no chance of coming back. So that's why I would say the second was more damaging to Notre Dame's chances. Now, granted, you can make the argument if Notre Dame stops the run, maybe the offense doesn't have to be perfect, but you're also missing a lot of players on defense. You weren't necessarily missing a lot of players on offense, at least that we weren't, you know, accustomed to already be missing.
Fair take.
And that is it. That is it. We are, it's going to say, it says 2 hours officially on the recording. Once I edit out, you know, the little bit in the beginning and after, it'll probably be a little bit less, but I did not, when we started this, did not see this coming. This is almost as unexpected as Caleb Williams running for 3 touchdowns, almost as unexpected as Stanford and Marshall both beating Notre Dame this season. Yeah, I didn't see that coming. Tomorrow is going to be a challenge. But you know what? It was worth it. It was worth it. The 2022 Notre Dame football season. The real victory is the friends we made along the way, and that's what we're doing. So, real reward. The real reward were the friends we made along the way. So that's why we're doing this. But. That's all I got. That's more than I thought I had.
Let's go to bed.
I'm gonna go to bed. All right, everybody. As always, you know, we thank you for listening. We thank you for the questions. And I guess we're gonna figure out our non-game week recording schedules. And when we do pods throughout the offseason before the bowl game. But we're going to keep doing them because y'all are listening and y'all are giving us great questions. So we're going to keep them going. All right. With that, we're going to end, as always, Go Irish.